This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
First, let's start off with what everybody would love to ask about.
It's come to my attention that the quarterback's been out in the media over the last week.
This whole storm that happened, it wasn't something that we wanted to happen at this point.
I think that Carl wanted his son to have the best chance of success and to go to a team that, you know, had an established and innovative offensive mind. As it got closer, it was just clear that their options were limited.
Caleb, does your dad speak for you?
No. No. I actually shut my dad down quite a bit.
He went to the combine, he met with the Bears, and he met also with Kevin O'Connell, head coach of the Vikings, and he really vibed well with O'Connell, so much to the point where he kind of started to dream of working with him.
I had a good visit at the other place, Minnesota, with Kevin O'Connell. He just won Coach of the Year award and things like that, so obviously good staff and things like that.
Alex Smith really took it upon himself to teach Patrick Mahomes these things that no one taught him, how to watch film, the ways you do it from the inside out. That's the type of instruction that the Bears didn't provide at times for Caleb Williams, and I think it's a massive indictment on that staff.
That was a funny one that came out. It wasn't that I didn't know how to watch film. It was more or less the sense of learning ways to watch film and be more efficient.
At the end of the day, Caleb didn't want to, and as he told me, I wasn't ready to nuke Chicago. After he visited the Bears, he came back and said, you know, I can do it here. I want to be a Bear.
That last thing that was said and all of that, I think, was the most important thing, is that I wanted to be here.
When it comes to the timing of the book, I believe it comes
book
with a book.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
We do have 21 questions for Seth. Well, maybe not 21. Seth Wickersham has a book coming out in September. I cannot wait for it. Not even just for the Caleb stuff. I'm fascinated by the whole concept of building quarterbacks. American Kings, a biography of the quarterback, is going to be out right after the Bears play the Vikings on Monday Night Football. So you can get your pre-orders in right now, wherever it is that you get your books. He joins us now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. It's this Spiegel and Holmes show. Sarah Spain sitting in for Spiegs with Seth Wickersham.
Hi, Seth. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, happy anniversary, by the way, Sarah.
Thank you. They surprised me
with
that one. Yeah. So I want to start with like a big picture question, because as somebody who is constantly digging for all these interviews and getting to speak to all the people to give us the stories behind the scenes, I want to know just the vibe you got from Caleb's dad, just the impression that you got talking to him.
I thought he was a very endearing guy. I enjoyed talking to him. I thought that... Look, let's zoom out for a second. You know, I think that, I could, there's a lot of different ways I can go with this. You know, there's two things. Number one, when Jack Elway, you know, wanted to figure out a way to give his son some agency over his employer and wanted to figure out a way around the draft process, you know, he and John gave a press conference. And it's remarkable to watch now. I mean, it was so... like arrogant, you know, maybe that's the best way to put it. I mean, at one point, Jack Elway forgot the name of Ernie Accorsi, who was the Baltimore Colts general manager at the time. And I mean, it was an example of two men who were kind of preening. And, you know, Carl Williams is not that type of guy. I mean, you think about if like Carl and Caleb gave a press conference like that nowadays, if they would ever recover from it. And maybe Elway barely did. I think that Carl was a sophisticated mind. He knows that for as much as we glamorize and celebrate quarterbacks, luck matters a lot in terms of whether they're successful, and the place that they go and that basically owns their rights for 8 years plays a huge part in that. And he wanted to try to figure out a way to give his son options. And let's zoom back for just one sec. You know, think about the image of the quarterback dad and, you know, what that conjures up. it's a dangerous, it's one of the things I get into the book, but it's like the entire youth quarterback circuit is a dangerous place. There's people coming at these teenagers from all different directions, and it's hard to tell who has your best interests. And, you know, sometimes your parents are the people that do. And even though the public doesn't like that for some reason, I think that, you know, someone like Carl had his son's best interests at heart, and, you know, everything came from that.
Seth, I feel like most people, and I'll throw myself into this group, most people saw the quotes from Caleb and kind of said, yeah, he was right about all of those things after watching his rookie season with the Bears and it being a bit of a disaster for the franchise. I'd love to know, like, other people that have interacted with you about this particular story, do they understand that even though they might bristle at the idea of some of those quotes from Caleb, the reasoning behind their trepidation seemed to be justified?
Oh, it was without a doubt justified. I mean, the head coach didn't last the season and the offensive coordinator didn't last the season. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's all the justification one needs. I mean, Caleb was sacked 68 times. Now, some of those aren't all on the offensive line. Some of them are on the quarterback, but he's a rookie. I mean, he is a rookie year for a quarterback is about surviving and proving something. And he definitely did both of those. And I think that even though, you know, it took a year, they have what they wanted. And that's an innovative offensive mind whose success is, you know, heavily judged and graded by the success of the quarterback. And, you know, even before Ben Johnson was the hot name, you know, I talked to experienced coaches, Super Bowl coaches around the NFL who were stealing from him. You know, I mean, he, within the industry, he is very, very well regarded. And that's not the case for every head coach that's hired. And so I think that, like, you know, again, it took a while. It took a year. But, you know, I think that, like, they, you know, at the end of the day, Caleb got what he wanted, and I think the Bears got what they wanted. Now, does that mean they're going to be successful week one? I tend to be a little skeptical. I think that, like, it takes more time than people want to allow to adjust to a new offense. Defensive coordinators are going to be studying Caleb all offseason, and they're going to know what his weaknesses are and try to exploit them. But I think in the long run, this is a good pairing.
We're talking to Seth Wickersham and his reporting on Caleb Williams and his father for his new book. And I wonder if you had a chance to listen to a lot of what Caleb said in his presser in response to the quotes that came out in the advance of your book.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't listening to it live. I was actually on the road traveling and in the facility of another team at the time. But I thought he handled it incredibly well. And, you know, he look, the timeline that he laid out and the thoughts that he laid out were exactly what was in that news story. I know that the headlines were a little different, but, you know, everything that was in that news story and everything that's in the book is what he said, you know, at that press conference. And, you know, I thought that, like, as I've, you know, reported controversial things on people before, and you never know how they're going to handle it. A lot of people deny it in the moment, and then later on the truth comes out. The truth rises, as Bob Woodward, you know, always said. But I think that Caleb handled it incredibly. He was mature. He was reasonable. He was thoughtful. And that's who he is.
Yeah, I agree. I wonder, it didn't feel like he was totally distancing himself from his father. But when he was asked directly, does your father speak for you? And he said no. It does feel like he seems to be letting us know that they weren't always aligned in their handling of this or their thinking about it. Does that feel like it matches with your timeline in terms of when you were hearing these things for the first time? Did they feel like they used to be aligned and now Caleb knows he has to clean it up a little because he's here? Or does it feel like there was always this father trying to get out ahead of things and get the best situation? And maybe Caleb always was a little bit behind that.
Well, I think it's this, and it's said in the book, and it, you know, I've said it in interviews, and that's that this was Caleb's decision, and his dad can do all the research he wants and have his best interests in mind, but it's Caleb's decision. And everybody knew that, and everyone respected that for that matter. And so I think that when he's saying that, I think that he's, my gut would tell me that, you know, he's reiterating, letting people know that, like, you know, he loves his father and his father has his best interest at heart, but he's his own man. And he was the one you know, as I reported and as he said yesterday, who decided, you know, that he wanted to try to be part of the process of turning things around in Chicago.
I want to go macro with you for a second, because mm-hmm. this is a subject matter that I'm fascinated by. My theory that at some point I will actually like sit down and go through some of these numbers is this. I feel like the quarterback position has changed dramatically over the last 15 years. And the reason why is because high school coaches have figured out, instead of having someone like me be the quarterback of the team and throw the ball to the best athlete on the team, why not have the best athlete have the ball in his hands every single snap? And partially because in some of the places where you don't have a lot of talent, that's the best choice on how you're going to be able to win. One, I'd love to know if it, what your thoughts are on that as a premise. And two, mm-hmm. what did you find out in why maybe we're seeing changes from a not even necessarily a cultural standpoint, but from a strategic standpoint on the quarterbacks that have come into the NFL over the last 15 years?
Well, and I think to take, I agree with your points, and I would take that a step further. And that's that, like, coaches in really in college, I mean, it really happened 04, 05, 06, 07. And, you know, Mike Leach was a big driver of it. I think Urban Meyer was too. But that the college offense has figured out ways to create space. And especially exploiting the hash marks. Like, I remember the Milwaukee Brewers, before the Colorado Rockies existed, the Milwaukee Brewers had a minor league team in Denver called the Denver Zephyrs. And they never knew how to evaluate any of those players because the statistics were so skewed by the fact that they were playing at mile high altitude. And it's like, these coaches have gotten so good at creating space on offense for quarterbacks in high school and in college that you almost can't, you have to throw the statistics out when you're trying to evaluate them on a pro level, because, you know, you have people like Bailey Zappe who can barely hang on in the league, who owns the college record for touchdown passes in a season. And it's kind of the quarterback version of performance inflation. And so I think that, like, the notoriety has increased, but in a very real way, the quarterback has become someone who is almost like more replaceable than ever, which is kind of a crazy thought, but it's true. I mean, college quarterbacks who are not great NFL quarterbacks are able to come in college and put up better numbers than Andrew Luck or John Elway or any of these guys, Peyton Manning, put up.
Do you think that the coaching in the NFL is caught up to the talent? Here's why I ask the question. Mm-hmm. I look at someone like Jalen Hurts, and I feel like 10 years ago, he would not have gotten the opportunity to be a Super Bowl champion quarterback. And I think Nick Sirianni did a great job of figuring out how to maximize all the things that he can do. But there are other quarterbacks, and we dealt with this here in Chicago. I still think that Justin Fields is untapped potential. And I think part of the reason that he is because of coaching and maybe guys not really knowing what to do with dual threat guys and the impatience of that rookie deal that makes people sometimes, I think, make bad decisions.
Yeah, I would take that two ways. I mean, I think number one, you know, look, there's not 32 great quarterbacks in the NFL and there are not 32 great coaches. And there's a reason why, you know, in the owners meetings a couple of years ago, the league held up a slide that showed the collective amount of money that teams were paying coaches that they had fired. And I think it was close to $750 million. I mean, they cycle through quarterbacks and they cycle through coaches in a hurry. And even the best quarterback, even the best quarterback coaches, you took it like someone like Kyle Shanahan, you know, has a spotted record as an evaluator. I mean, they traded up everything for Trey Lance, who may not even have an NFL career. And so I think that, like, you're absolutely right in that regard. And I think that that's, again, you know, Carl Williams can see those numbers too. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, coaching mattered. And it's one of the reasons why he was sometimes probably a little too careful, you know, a little too free on Twitter, you know, retweeting tweets that, you know, took shots at the Bears coaches. You know, his son just wasn't coached very well last year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that stuff, it just matters. Like, we talk about system quarterbacks, like it's a bad word. Look at John Elway's statistics in his career under Dan Reeves and under everybody else. Even John Elway, who is the least system quarterback ever, is a system quarterback. And coaching matters.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite clear to us here in Chicago, and that's, I think, why we're so excited about Ben Johnson. The fact that the rest of the league also knows he's great, and we actually chose him instead of some jamoke from Canada or a guy whose most exciting trait was whether he had a beard or not. Like, I feel like we finally got someone to get excited about. But I guess in this book, do you finally answer that age-old question that we've had for years and used to be the hottest topic of debate around quarterbacks, which is it better to let them sit behind someone and learn or start right away? Or is the answer ultimately something else we've always said, which is it depends on where they are and they will succeed or fail sitting behind someone or starting right away, regardless, based solely on the coaches, the team, the front office, everything else?
Yeah, I mean, there's debate either way, and I don't have some great answer for that. I do think that, like, mentality matters so much. And I think that one of the, you know, my book is about quarterbacks, but it's really about American fame since maybe 1885, 1906, and certainly the 1940s. And, you know, how quarterback has become so big in the culture that I think that it you need to be the type of person that's almost like a rock star, a movie star, and a politician, where you have to believe somewhere deep inside, even if you can't admit it, that you are a superior person.
Oh, like
to
a surgeon.
Around you.
They say that about surgeons. You almost have to feel like you're God in order to be willing to go into someone's body and be like, I got this.
When you get on an airplane, you know, everybody goes right and the quarterbacks go left. And they have to believe that, like, you know, they can land that plane. And it's a fragile thing. And, you know, they almost have to create an ecosystem that kind of doesn't allow for doubt, because that to have that kind of ego and to get to the mental place you have to by Sunday, which is like you can't have any doubt, it takes a lot of work and it's not always healthy. And as I explained in the book, for the ones who do it at the highest level, it's kind of incompatible with life away from football.
So Shedeur Sanders will be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But I think that, like, you know, Shedeur is more transparent about it than some other guys, but they all have to go there. I mean, Tom Brady talks about it. The quarterback has to be the magic, and you have to believe that you're the magic. And that, to me, I think is a very interesting mental space that goes a long way to determining, you know, a quarterback's success.
I want to go back to talking about Ben Johnson, and we can feed Bears fans the red meat of how well respected he is around the league. We've already seen in just a couple of practices that he's got an edge and he's got some style to him. In doing the book, in covering the NFL overall, I want everything. Unload the folder right now, Seth. Tell us all the good stuff that we need to know about Ben Johnson.
Well, Ben's not a big character in the book, obviously, but I think that, like, look, when you're a head coach, you eventually want to develop into a triple threat. And here's what I mean by that. You want to have a philosophy and a program. Like Pete Carroll, you know, Bill Belichick, they have philosophies and they have programs. You need to have an expertise. Clearly, Ben Johnson has that. And then I think you have to be able to coach players, you know, whichever way that is. You have to be that amateur psychologist who can connect with players, inspire them, get them to be their best. And most of all, you know, hope is fragile in the NFL. I mean, there's so much noise and, you know, we're all part of it, you know, that's between games, and they have to figure out a way to inspire hope and confidence. And I think that if I'm a Bears fan, here's what I like about Ben Johnson. I don't know the program part of things. That'll play itself out, but he's clearly got an expertise. And I think that because of the way that he coaches, which I think is a very intellectual approach, I think that it bodes well, because NFL players like being told where they can be to make plays and eventually earn more money. You know, it kind of boils down to that. I mean, you know, put me in a position to do what I do best so that I can maximize this incredibly fleeting career. And I think that the way that Ben Johnson coaches, which, you know, again, it's of that McVay, Shanahan, Belichick, you know, I'm, you know, there's other guys out there who are obviously like that, but it kind of draws on the intellectual approach. And I'm sure that that is taxing for Ben Johnson. I'm sure that that is something that his creative process is probably an incredibly grueling thing and maybe not pretty up close all the time, but it's obvious that he has something special.
Yeah, I like that he's intellectual, but he brings a little Dan Campbell where there's
he's
a little spice.
He's got some meatball. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not the Belichick style of grumpy pants. It's like intellectual, thoughtful, but also brings a little spice. Last question for you, Seth, before we let you go, because you also wrote It's Better to be Feared about Belichick in the New England Patriots dynasty. You have dug into some serious topics. You have made some people angry. And I am curious, as someone who just finished my first book and did all the interviews and all the research, and in my book, it's a nice reflection of most of the people in it. But you have to earn their trust and then put it out there and hope for the best. In your case, you're not always painting the nicest picture. What's the craziest or scariest response you've gotten about one of your articles or books, whether that's literal death threats or people wanting to come to your house and have a talking to about the things that you said?
You know, there was a moment where there were some death threats and, you know, ESPN security was involved, but I never felt scared. I mean, I think that it was something that kind of the protocol was tripped and that's how things went. I mean, you know, I think there's some noise online, but, you know, I've done a lot of work on the Patriots. Let's just take them for example. And, you know, like I said, the truth tends to rise. And so even if in the moment something seems kind of shocking, like maybe it was in 2018 when, you know, the principals of that team really weren't getting along. You know, by the time, even in that off season, you know, but, and especially now when, like, you know, Brady is out of it and he has his documentaries and he talks about, you know, how things kind of went downhill and he knew he had to, he needed to leave. And Robert Kraft, obviously what happened with the Dynasty documentary where, you know, it was a pretty harsh critique of Belichick, you know, that stuff eventually comes out. And so I think that, like, you know, you have to weather a storm sometimes in the moment, but, you know, you have faith that, like, you kind of got to the essence of something. It's not for everybody. It's not that I seek it out necessarily, you know what I mean? But I think that, like, what we're trying to do is portray as real of an idea and a picture of what's going on to fans about the people and the teams and the sport that they care about. And that can be done a lot of different ways, but, you know, sometimes it involves, you know, some details about and facts about, you know, the people that they really idolize and look up to that may be unsavory at times.
So Seth, I got to ask you this before we let you go. The Chicagoan in me wants to pronounce your name Wickersham because that's what we do with the A's.
Sham.
So I've been, I've been purposely saying, dropping the A to a U and making it Wickersham.
Cause that sounds like New England.
How do you say it?
Well, the latter, but, you know, being, you know, my, it's a British name, but for Christ's sake, I grew up in Alaska. So, like, we have no accent there. I don't take offense to how it's pronounced anyway. I was really glad. Can I just say that when you said I have one more question, that it wasn't about Belichick and his girlfriend.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I thought that's where you were going to. Is the next book about Jordan Hudson and the ring cam?
Please no. And I mean, has there ever been a coach in American history who has had this much scrutiny on their significant other? I don't think so.
I mean stop dressing up like a fisherman and a mermaid and we'll stop asking questions, you weirdo.
We are in a moment. We are in a moment.
There's no doubt about it. Seth, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. I cannot wait for the book to come out. American Kings, a biography of the quarterback, Seth Wickersham, joining us here on The Score. Thank you so much for the time.
Thanks, Seth.
All right. Great to see you guys. Thanks.
That was awesome and really great interview. And I'm stoked for this book. I'm so looking. This is wheelhouse for me. This is where I like to geek out and talk about. Tanny knows, like, I've been on this whole, like, theory about quarterbacks for a while. So to see someone like Seth writing a book like this.
The definitive from the 1800s, it sounds like, through now. And especially, like, the interesting stuff about Arch Manning and the pariahs around them. I think a lot of people need to hear and learn about that stuff because that's how you end up in situations where Carl does feel like he has to protect Caleb and get out in front and figure out the system so the system doesn't work them.
And then where that line is, too, where pageant moms, dance moms, like, we're used to seeing it that way, and maybe we need to check our perspective on
my
this.
My eyes were opened by what he said. I have to be honest. My impression of Carl was more of a shoot first, ask questions later kind of guy who was getting his son into some hot water by not handling the industry with enough polish. But it sounds like he did approach it from this intellectual side, and he's just up against the difficulty of the system being something that's immovable. When you have a system like the NFL draft, you can look all the ways you can on how to work around it, and you end up realizing there isn't one.
I have a lot of respect for Carl Williams because of what it seems like the man that he helped raise has turned into. Mm-hmm. I think that Caleb, there, if you met Caleb, you probably love him. You know, like you would want him to be friends with your kid, like that sort of thing. And considering that he allowed him to live on his own.
Yeah.
Like that's a,
well, that's the part that I was worried about, but seems like he turned out so well. When you hear about a kid saying, this is what I want, and the parents facilitating that in a sense of, well, you'll be a professional from this age. You'll live by yourself. You'll start to figure out your bills. You'll get your NIL money and have to deal with that. You worry about whether that's just a parent trying to live through their child,
yeah,
or start making that money from their kid and using their kid as a means to quit their job and just have them support them. But it does feel like it's really just gotten him prepared to be the guy that we see who shows up in Chicago and, in my opinion, has handled every bit of this fame and challenge and media with exemplary character and says the right thing, but says something. You know, it's easy to say nothing and say the right thing. He actually talks back and gives answers, but he does it in a way that I think really handles the pressure well.
Why don't we continue this conversation and talk a little bit more about like how Caleb is covered, all right? And we can jump off from where we were having the conversation with Seth and talk a little bit more about Carl. Sarah Spain is here for Matt Spiegel. She's going to be here until 5 o'clock, and then Cassie Carlson is going to come hang out for the last hour of the show. More conversation about the Bears is on the way. You're listening to Spiegel and Holmes. Sarah Spain in for Spiegs on The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Spiegel and Holmes.
We're cooking with hot grease now, man.
Afternoons on The Score.
Caleb Williams. And jumping up and laying in the arms of family there.
Yeah. Tough night.
I want to go home and cuddle with my dog and watch some shows. I don't know what I like, you know.
Let me see those nails down, bro. Let me see those nails down, bro. Come on.
The Bears have a quarterback that, in my opinion, I think there are a lot of people that are out to get him. And I know that I sound like I'm paranoid. I feel like I'm the one that's doing dope. But I think that this is one of those opportunities where there are a lot of people just kind of been waiting for there to be some cracks and then go, oh, see, this is all the stuff that we thought about in the pre-draft experience. But I agree with Sarah Spain, who is sitting in today for Matt Spiegel, that considering what went down last year, the young man has handled things quite well.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the expectations or opinions of him came from, first of all, the rumors and the leaks about him not wanting to come to Chicago, which gets you off on the wrong foot. And then the dumb things like the fingernails. You have this generational shift, I think, away from stereotypical masculinity being the only possible option. And that show of strength has to be, you know, I'm going to go cut some wood, eat a raw steak and bite off a kneecap, right? Like that's what we need from our quarterback. Even though like we're starting to really understand that addressing your mental health and having, you know, a better perspective on everything will probably actually make you more successful as a person and as an athlete. But the older generation hasn't gotten there yet. So they see something like the fingernails or him crying after a game in college or saying he wants to snuggle his dog. That's not what I want from my quarterback. And the only answer is success. Honestly, the only way to change the minds of people who feel that way and think that way about particularly a younger generation of a different kind of man is for them to thrive and then for people to see that there's another way to do it.
The concept of dealing with failure, it's funny because I do think that most people should be able to relate to it because all of us fail and we deal with it in similar ways where there are days where you're like, I don't want to deal with anybody today. I'm just going to be on the couch. I'm just going to do that. Or I'm going to go have a drink or I'm going to go have a cry and let this out and then reboot myself and get ready for the challenges of the next day. Why do you think we don't allow our athletes to emote in that way?
Oh, how much time you got? I mean, I think a lot of it is just decades and decades of building up stereotypical ideas about the people who fit in different spaces and the people who will succeed in different spaces. And it's not until somebody upends a model and does so in a way that's wild and public and really successful that we start to recalculate. And for a long time, the answer at quarterback was strong, silent type. Doesn't say too much, doesn't draw too much attention.
Robot.
Yeah, flashy in their play, boring as hell off the field. And we sort of accepted that that was the only way to be. And so I think you combine that with, like I said, those sort of paternalistic views about what it means to be a man and your athlete should be the manliest of men. And when you have people bold enough, whether it's DeMar DeRozan being willing to come out and speak about mental health issues, whether it's athletes who are sort of embracing characteristically or stereotypically feminine sides in their pursuits off the field or otherwise, or even the very, very rare occasion that a male athlete, usually after retirement, will come out as gay. You suddenly have to reassess, oh, what did I think? Why did I think all of them were the same and that the only way to be was the same? When we do know that there's the Michael Jordans of the world that are insanely competitive and probably will never be happy post-basketball because he can't find an outlet that's like that. And then there are the Jokic's that are like, hey, I'm going to play basketball. And then as soon as I'm done, I'm going to go race some horses and forget basketball exists. And I'm still going to be the best.
I think that you're so on with that. Like that spectrum in a lot of different ways. It's hard for people to conceptually understand that we're, and like, not the Caleb necessarily for the nails thing, not that he needed a reason, but the reason of it being a bonding thing with his mother was like summarily dismissed. and I appreciated the way that he was like, well, the good thing is that I have this bonding thing with my mom and I want to use the platform to, if other people feel like they need help, I want to be a beacon. Right. Like that's a lot for a 22-year-old to think of and say, this is how I'm going to present myself going forward with this.
And it's also, people always mistake the strongest for the weak. The stronger person is the one that will have painted nails and know they're going to get destroyed for it and know that there are small-minded people who are going to try to use that as some, you know, larger take on whether he's good enough to be a quarterback in the NFL. And he did it anyway. Like, that's where people, I think, mistake that for weakness or softness. A guy who's not sure of himself is not doing that.
I always thought it was weird, too. And we're products of the Jordan era. This city in particular, when you saw it with Dennis Rodman, and then you just forgot, like,
right.
You forgot 25 years later, like, right. That.
Although I don't know if I'd want Rodman to be my quarterback.
No.
Slightly different role for him.
Defensive end.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah.
Defensive end for sure. Yeah. But even like just the idea, right, of Dennis Rodman was making us ask a lot of questions when he was doing his thing. And I felt like it was one of those things like, oh, okay, we're evolving and saying, hey, folks can be on a spectrum.
Not our quarterbacks. We are so specific and strange about our quarterbacks. But I will say, another interesting aspect for me with this whole Caleb thing is how the media shift has affected the way that athletes are covered and the way that fans talk about them. When we've moved away from straight up journalism, where most of the coverage you're getting are people in the locker room, speaking to the athletes and coaches, and then coming back and writing a newspaper column or going on the radio or going on TV and sharing the things that they've learned directly. Now we live in this world of aggregation and in this world of armchair journalists. That can be great at times. There are some people who are listening right now who probably put out a great YouTube show or have their own podcast and have their thoughts.
A great TikTok account.
Great TikTok. And they have things to say. They aren't, you know, burdened by sponsors or expectations from a larger media company, right? There's some good stuff there. There's also a lot of trash and there's a lot of lies, and those lies spread so fast. I want to shout out my guys, Kevin and Marty. They are massive Score fans. They cannot believe I am hosting with you today.
Hey, Kevin and Marty.
I love you guys, but you don't know what you're doing when it comes to digital literacy. You don't know when things are real. They're constantly sending me a report from some site that has like no credibility. And they're like, wow, so the deal's done in Arlington Heights. Wow, so this guy's traded. And every time I'm like, okay, that's not true. And they listen to the show every day and they're so into it, but they don't have the ability to vet and source. And so I do feel for athletes in today's game, because you got like NBA Centel and these sites that their intention says parody, but once that's clipped and screen grabbed and sent somewhere, nobody knows it's fake. You believe it. And then you have an opinion about these athletes based on intentional parodies or lies or just stretching of the truth with no accountability. You and I don't want to say something wrong and unfair. We have a responsibility to the athlete to be fair and try to be honest and true in our coverage. The average Joe does not have that. And that stuff spreads so fast. So now as an athlete, you're answering to real stuff, like these conversations Caleb had with his dad about the Bears, and completely made up stuff that my buds Kevin and Marty might associate you with you for the rest of your life that you never said or did.
I'm so glad that you said that, because, and look, I am not, I don't like gatekeeping in a lot of different ways. And I know that at this point here in Chicago, the Score is now the Heritage brand. You know, like 30 years ago, we were the Outlaw station. Now we're kind of the Heritage brand as things grow. And sometimes when you're trying to have bigger conversations about things, people don't understand there's a reason that I'm not saying this, that, or the other. One, I don't want to get sued. Mm-hmm. I don't want the station's license to be in trouble. I don't want the station to get sued. There is a responsibility to everyone who works here, right?
And I also hope you don't want to say something that might not
wrong.
Be true.
Correct.
Because everyone's going to hear it the first time and they're not going to hear it when you come back on and say I was wrong.
Like, for example, and I'm now going to ask people to continue to read between the lines a little bit here. All of the stuff that was rumored about Mike Clevenger and why he was a White Sox, why he continued to be on the roster, all of those crazy theories that were out there that people on the internet were saying, that White Sox Twitter was talking about, I was aware of them. And in some cases, I did have some proof, but not enough proof to then go on the air with some of it. So some of that stuff, they're like, I know, Lawrence, you know why he's on the roster. Mm-hmm. I kind of do.
Maybe, probably even.
But
yep.
I would like for it to be a little bit more than one source. And I think one source reporting has become a thing too. In some cases, no source reporting.
I mean, look what happened with McAfee and the woman suing him for just going with an internet rumor and ruining that girl's life.
Yeah.
And if you don't know that story, you can look it up. But like, we have a certain responsibility and power understanding the weight of the things that we say. And particularly when I was on the air for ESPN, I thought to myself, when I watch ESPN, I presume that everything everyone says there is fact, when it's not an opinion-based subjective thing, that they've reported it, they've vetted it, I can trust it. And so I'm going to believe it. When I'm on the internet, I look at them differently. And a lot of people in the younger generation don't really make a difference between where they're getting something, where they're reading something, where they're seeing something. And there are such sometimes manipulative and increasingly believable experts, quote unquote, on TikTok or whatever, that say the right buzzwords, and then people walk away and they're like, yep, I do need to do a cleanse for the worms, and you know, like whatever it is. But when we lack our digital literacy and our critical thinking skills, and the next generation more and more so will have to deal with that because of the way they're going to use AI and other things and not train their brain to understand whether something feels legit or not, athletes are the least of our worries. But I do feel for them that you're combating all the real stuff and all the pressure of trying to win with also a bunch of crap that people just spread around.
I had a moment last night that I wanted to talk with you about. I was watching hoops, and there was something I saw where I go, oh, like the light clicked on for me about something. So I want to share it with you, see if you feel similarly, and talk a little bit about it. Dan Weider is going to join us at 4 o'clock. Sarah Spain is in for Spiegs. It's the Spiegel and Holmes show here on The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Who would dare interrupt me during my midday fast? Yeah. Oh, the Spiegel and Holmes show.
Afternoons on The Score.
The Magic Johnson Trophy for the 2025 Western Conference Finals. Most valuable player is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
I just want to shout out these fans. They've been here. A couple years I got here, there's some really dark times in this arena. Not fun times, and these fans have been by our side through thick and thin. So we appreciate them, first and foremost. And then, of course, I want to thank my teammates. Without them, I'm nothing. Clear as day. I don't have 124 points by myself.
Courtesy of ESPN and ABC, last night, the Thunder advanced to the NBA Finals, and it looks like we're getting close to what I think it could be really interesting, the Thunder and the Pacers, and whether or not, as a basketball nation, we could actually allow ourselves to watch good basketball, even though they are the two smallest markets in the NBA. Sarah Spain is in for Speaks today. Sarah, last night, I'm watching the game, and I'm like, wrapping up the night. The Cubs had taken care of business. I'm like, okay, Sarah's got all these thoughts that she wants to get off on the show tomorrow. So I'm like, let me start thinking about where we're going to slot that. I'm watching the game last night, and I'm watching Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And it was also dope that he played against his cousin, like, inside of that series. And I know that the concept of the face of the NBA can be kind of a downer from a conversational standpoint. Yeah. But I was sitting there going, oh, you know what? I think we may have found him. I think this guy might be it. That he is worthy of picking up Thor's hammer. He seems to be all the things that you want. He plays well. He's fun. They got a crazy group of young guys on that team in Oklahoma City, and he seems to be the one that's okay with being out front about it. So I know that there are tons of think pieces, and people are worried about, well, what's the future of the NBA. I feel like I'm witnessing it, and I'm good with where it's going if it's that guy.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I had that lightning bolt. No, that's not what you said. Light bulb.
Light
that's
bulb.
What you said. Light bulb.
I mean, I also brought up Thor, so the lightning
right.
bolt
I think,
thing
yeah,
makes
your mixed
sense.
Metaphors really threw me off there.
Sorry.
I had that moment as well, but it was actually when he was accepting his MVP and had his Kevin Durant, you're the real MVP moment, but with his wife. And he was so emotional and so honest. Oh, let's hear it.
The one and only Haley Summers. Thank you. Sorry, I'm so dramatic. Haley Summers, thank you for everything you are for me, for our son Aries. You were the first person to show me what love really meant. What love really meant, what sacrifice really meant. And I can't wait to spend the rest of this journey called life with you. So thank you for everything. I wouldn't be the man I am, I wouldn't be the player I am, I wouldn't be the father I am without you. But thank you for that. So thank you, everybody.
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of people aren't going to like that. And I think it's so authentic. and so real, and lets you know that this is someone he's going to be in public and be himself and let it all out. And I like that he made fun of himself. I like that he was like, oh, I'm so dramatic. That also made it feel real versus sometimes when you feel like someone has an affect. Okay, now I'm going to be emotional and show you that I really rely on my wife or my mom. But with him, it felt real. And then that same guy is clowning with his guys during post-game interviews and looks like a kid who's just having a blast out there. And to have those multifaceted views of him and him letting you in that way, where he's not a robot basketball player. I think you're right. I think he's got a good shot. His name is going to be hard for people.
It shouldn't be that hard. It shouldn't be. Even if you just want to do SGA.
Hey, is this day one for you, buddy? We struggle with people who don't have a name we've heard every single day. And we act like we can't possibly learn it. But Giannis Antetokounmpo can do it. We can learn Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
I would hope so. I hate the Knicks, and I didn't tell you this, but it popped up last week. Like, the Knicks-Bulls thing for me, It kicked back in.
That's, like, the only team I kind of hate.
Damn it. This is exactly where I was at.
Yeah.
And I didn't, because I kind of hate Indy, too. But
interesting.
It hit me harder. I was sitting there going, I don't like rooting for either one of these teams. But then I was like, oh, I clearly have a team that I'm rooting against.
Yeah, it's the Knicks.
And it's the Knicks.
It's not the Knicks players. It's obviously James Dolan for a million reasons, but
it's not even their coach. I love Tibbs.
No, it's the fans, because they always try to act like we're the same. We're not the same. You haven't won Jack, you know what, since the 1970s. And they're always in the Menchies back in the day, like, oh, it just feels just like, no, it doesn't. You guys are trash. You've been trash for a long time. No one cares about MSG. Every free agent, they're like, we're good because everyone wants to play at the Mecca. These players weren't born when that building was cool. It might be cool in a nostalgic way, but not in the way that an 18, 19, 20-year-old wants to be. They want a cool facility, and that place is falling apart. I couldn't agree more.
It's the idea of it being Mecca has always bothered me, too. Like, no, it's not. And, like, even if you want to talk about, well, there's Rucker Park and there's all of the legendary street ball. Yeah, there's also legendary street ball here in Chicago, and there's legendary street ball in Seattle and in Detroit and in Dallas, and you like the idea that they have the all of that in New York, and that's the only place where it exists, I've always found fascinating. And the thing about the way that they've been acting, like the idea of you, the people who are from Mecca, basketball Mecca, having watch parties for the Eastern Conference quarterfinals.
Wanting to change the names of streets before you even won anything.
Right!
But it makes me have a little bit of empathy for them because they literally can't act like they've been there before.
Yeah, a lot of those fans
have it. Because they have it.
A lot of those. Okay, I'm glad that
we share
this. I mean,
you and I got to grow up understanding what greatness is. We have greatness flowing through our blood.
Yeah!
The 90s Bulls are a part of us. We understand what it is to rule the entire universe, not even just this nation. And they don't understand. They're just sad little New York fans who have to get excited about their bing-bonging. And honestly, the bing-bonging won't be lasting long.
Knicks are here, baby! First out the club, baby!
Sorry for the bing-bongs. The bing-bong community is sad.
Well, they still have a chance, and we'll see how they do tonight. I was joking with Speaks about this a couple of days ago. Have you seen the memes of Tyrese Halliburton's game is like Urkel's game?
No.
When he played with Grandmama? You got to look it up because
now there's an interesting guy.
Very much so.
He's so quirky. He's got the two different voices. His dad should not be on the court trying to fight people.
No.
And we shouldn't be having free, I forget his dad's name, but we shouldn't be having statements like he's been in jail. He's not in jail.
And now he's back in the game.
He's rightfully was out because he shouldn't be on the court trying to fight bros. But he's also very likable to me. You know what I read today, which of course for me, it's my sweet spot. He was calling Sue Bird asking for advice in these stretches because she's one of the greatest winners of all time,
Has
won everything under the sun. And he's showing up courtside for Indiana Fever games. Like, I like the bro that doesn't take himself too seriously. And Halliburton is an interesting, likable guy. He's also just weird. And that rubs people the wrong way sometimes.
Weird is okay, I think. It should be okay. Speaking of which, Dan Weider, who's going to join us, was like, hey, if we don't want to talk football with him, we could ask him about being a 12U baseball coach.
Oh, boy.
So Dan Weider is going to join us, and we got all sorts of stuff for him. Sarah Spain, one more hour here, sitting in for Spiegs on The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.